All right, we've got a really interesting case to dig into today, listener. It's Stone v. Ritter, and it dives into corporate law, specifically how much responsibility corporate directors have for keeping an eye on what's happening in their companies.
Yeah, that's it. Oversight and good faith, right at the heart of it. This case focuses on AmSouth Bank Corporation and how they got into some hot water when their employees broke anti-money laundering laws.
And what makes this whole thing even more fascinating, from what I understand, is that nobody's claiming that the directors themselves knew about this illegal stuff going on. So what gives? Why were shareholders suing?
Good question. Well, the argument was that even though the directors weren't directly involved, they failed, like utterly failed, to set up systems to prevent or even detect this wrongdoing. That's where this thing called the Caremark standard comes into play.
Caremark. Okay. Gotta be honest, not ringing a bell. Can you break down what that is for our listeners and me?
Sure thing. It's a big deal, like a landmark legal precedent. Sets the bar for what we expect from directors when it comes to monitoring their company. Basically, Caremark says they don't have to be all-knowing, catching every little slip-up, but they do need to show they're making a good-faith effort to put systems in place that keep them informed. Imagine setting up an alarm system, but for corporate wrongdoing.
Okay, starting to get it. Not about predicting the future, but having reasonable safeguards. So what does that actually look like in practice? What kind of systems would pass this good-faith test?
Another great question. Depends on the industry, size of the company, all that. But generally, we're talking things like clear reporting procedures, a dedicated compliance officer, internal audits, maybe a whistleblower hotline, that sort of stuff.
Gotcha. So in this AmSouth case, did they have any of these things in place, or are they just winging it?
Well, actually, they did take some steps. They had a BSA officer, that stands for Bank Secrecy Act, key role for anti-money laundering. And they'd set up a compliance department, even had a whole committee focused on overseeing suspicious activity. They were getting regular reports on all this, too.
So it doesn't sound like they were totally ignoring the issue. They had some layers of oversight there. So this is where it gets kind of tricky, right? They seemingly did quite a bit, but it still wasn't enough to satisfy the law.
Exactly. That's the fuzzy line between acting in good faith and simply having a bad outcome. Just because something went wrong doesn't automatically mean the directors were acting in bad faith.
All right, so how does a court figure out if a board was acting in good faith if it's not just about whether something bad happened or not?
They look at whether the monitoring systems were reasonable given the situation. They get into the details. Did the board really engage with the information they were getting, asking the right questions? Were they genuinely trying to understand and manage those risks, or just going through the motions?
That's a super important distinction. It's not just about having a system, but about how they use it. So theoretically, a board could have all the bells and whistles, but still be in trouble if they weren't truly using the information they were getting.
Absolutely. Remember, Caremark is all about good faith effort. The court wants to see a real commitment to reducing risk, not just ticking boxes.
So if it's not just about checking off boxes, how does a board actually show that commitment to reducing risk? What would prove they were truly engaged, not just like passively reading reports?
Now that's where it gets really interesting. The court in Stone v. Ritter, they specifically pointed out that AmSouth's board, they did get these regular reports about their anti-money laundering program. But the big question became, what did they do with that information? Did they really dig into it, ask tough questions, you know, put their compliance officers on the spot? Did they push for improvements when things weren't working right?
Sounds like the court was looking for evidence of them actually like actively overseeing things, not just hear no evil, see no evil.
Right? Exactly. They needed to show they were using the information they were getting to make, you know, smart decisions.
This raises another question for me, though. The court said there weren't any clear red flags in AmSouth's case. But what would have been a red flag? Like, how much is enough for a board to switch from just monitoring to actually taking action?
That's a huge point, and honestly, there's no easy answer. The court in Stone v. Ritter, they didn't give us a list or anything, but what they did emphasize was this idea of reasonableness. What would a reasonable, careful director do in that situation?
So it all comes down to context. What's a blaring siren for one company might be totally normal for another.
Exactly. The size of the business, the industry, the specific risks they face, all of that plays a role in figuring out what's a red flag and how to respond.
Can you give us some examples? Like, what are some general things that should at least make a board sit up and take notice? You know, maybe dig a little deeper.
Sure. Let's say a company's compliance hotline is blowing up, way more reports than usual. Or maybe internal audits keep finding the same violations over and over. Those could be signs that the current controls aren't cutting it, and the board needs to take a closer look.
Okay, so those are like internal signals, things happening inside the company. What about stuff happening outside, like changes in regulations, or if a competitor starts doing something shady, would those be red flags too?
Absolutely. Boards got to stay informed about the bigger picture, you know, what's going on in the world around them, new law that affects their business, competitor playing fast and loose. They need to know about it and think about how it might impact their own compliance efforts.
So it's not just about looking inward, but also keeping an eye on the outside world, right?
Right. It's about connecting the dots, seeing how those outside factors could create new risks or make existing ones even worse. A really engaged board is always looking ahead, you know, scanning for threats and adjusting their systems to match.
This is making me think about that Disney case, which also dealt with board oversight. Are there any connections there that would be helpful for our listener?
Definitely. The Disney case is a good one because it really clarifies this whole good faith effort thing. The court in that case said it has to be a genuine effort to understand and address risks. Can't just go through the motions or blindly trust what management is saying.
So just like in Stone v. Ritter, it's not just about having the policies. It's about how the board uses them and the information they get from them. They have to prove they're really trying to act in the best interests of the company.
Exactly. And I think this all circles back to the core idea of the duty of loyalty. Directors, they have this legal and ethical obligation to act in the best interests of the company and its shareholders. And a big part of that is making sure there are strong compliance systems and that they're being used effectively to manage risk.
So it seems like both of these cases, Stone v. Ritter and the Disney case, they really highlight how crucial it is for boards to be actively involved in oversight, not just like passively rubber stamping whatever management throws their way. But how do these cases actually change things in the real world? Do they lead to any concrete changes in how companies actually do business?
Really good question. It's tough to say for sure what caused what, but I definitely think these cases, along with, you know, the growing focus on corporate accountability in general, they've contributed to a shift in thinking. We're seeing more emphasis on having independent boards, a greater awareness of the importance of having, you know, specialized expertise on boards, especially in areas like risk management and compliance, and definitely a more proactive approach to spotting and dealing with potential problems.
So it's bigger than just avoiding getting sued, right? It's about creating a culture where everybody's responsible for compliance from the top all the way down.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I think the real value of these cases comes in. They're like a loud reminder that oversight from the board, it's not just about checking a legal box. It's a vital part of good corporate governance. It's about making sure the company is ethical, responsible, protecting shareholder interests, and, you know, ultimately building a sustainable and trustworthy business.
Makes sense. So for our listener who sent in this case, what's the key takeaway here? What should they be thinking about as they, you know, work through these concepts?
I'd say the biggest takeaway is that oversight from directors, it's an ongoing thing. It needs diligence, critical thinking, and a willingness to ask the tough questions. It's not something you set up and just forget about.
You got to be actively engaged, constantly checking if your systems are working, and ready to take action when they're not, right?
Absolutely. And maybe even more important is fostering that culture of compliance across the entire organization, where everyone understands their role in managing risk, where there's open communication, and everyone's committed to doing things the right way.
Well, I think we've given our listener a lot to think about today. This case, it really gets into the nitty-gritty of director oversight and that whole duty of good faith. Super interesting area of corporate law, and one that's probably going to keep evolving as we see new challenges and, you know, unfortunately, scandals pop up.
Totally agree. And I think the key for directors and really anyone involved in corporate governance is to stay informed, stay engaged, and never stop learning.
Great advice. And on that note, we encourage you, our listener, to keep digging into these topics, keep asking those tough questions, and, you know, really push the limits of your understanding. That's what the Deep Dive is all about. Until next time.